You are listening to episode 127 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. The winner of Best Technology goes to...
What do you know about this P-cell stuff and like 5G cellular technology?
Nothing.
Okay. So I read an article this week, and it is a very heady article. I mean, it's like you want to get into some, you know, antenna theory stuff, read this article. I like this kind of stuff, and it was a bit much for me. Basically, this guy gets into like how does current cell phone technology work, and what's the result of this? A couple weeks ago, basically there was a demonstration of what they called P cell technology, and it was this idea of they were demonstrating on relatively standard hardware, you know, your LTE capable hardware. They were demonstrating speeds that were crazy fast. I mean, just huge boosts in speed. And what they were talking about was like 5G quality speeds, right? Because right now we're on 4G. And 4G, 5G, all of that's just – a lot of that's meaningless, you know, marketing terminology at this point, because it's not a certified data set. But it's got general meetings. And basically what they're saying is – it's a big enough jump in speed where it might be considered a next generation speed bump. And what's really cool about it is, like I said, it works as an upgrade to, you know, standard handset hardware. So this is pretty cool. Huge. I'm just going to read a little bit of this article from him. Basically, he asks a couple of questions. Is this going to revolutionize wireless communication? While these demos alone don't necessarily demonstrate speeds beyond theoretically capable with what is theoretically capable with LTE systems today, I think the evidence is clear that this technology can offer a solution to the, quote, spectrum crunch problem. So I'd say yes, from a mobile consumer standpoint. It'll just seem like the next step in evolution from 4G to 5G. Much faster, more consistent speeds, lower latency. Now, whether or not this actually gets developed by the carriers is another matter altogether. Is this invention completely unique? No. Last year, it gets into basically, no, this is not necessarily unique in its theory. And then they asked, have they broken the Shannon limit, which let me grab the, no, they've just sidestepped it. Each user has their own channel and can use it up to the full Shannon limit without having to share it with anyone else. The Shannon and Harley theorem in information theory, the Shannon Hartley theory tells the maximum rate at which information can be transmitted over a communication channel of specified bandwidth in the presence of noise. It is an application of noisy channel coding. So basically what happens is when you have a cell phone system working out there, right, there's all sorts of radio frequencies out there going left, right, sideways, all over the place, getting in your way. And so there's this particular limit that you of data that you can get from your phone to the cellular towers, and really and truly, when we do like fiber optics, effectively what we're doing is we're using light to transmit a type of radio frequency electromagnetic spectrum, just like we would with radio waves. It's the same thing, just a different frequency, right? And it's effectively the same technology. The only difference is that over fiber optics, there's no light coming in, there's no light going out, there's nothing to introduce noise, to introduce interference, and so you're able to get these super high speeds, tons and tons of data. Whereas over the open world, you got tons of noise all over the place, and most of the noise is coming from other cell phone towers. If you've ever looked at a cell phone tower, they've got like a bunch of little things hanging off of them. Those are all like antennas, and different antennas for different carriers and different signals. And there's just a ton of like noise being generated by these things that are all kind of crossing each other out. And so basically what this guy gets into, and this is a super interesting article if you're into this sort of thing, and I'll try to summarize it as best I can. Basically what he gets into is like the idea of how we try to deal with that noise today. One of the things that we do is we try to like tune everything as quiet as possible. You know, cell phones are capable of outputting really powerful signals, but we haven't put out the weakest signal possible to still continue to talk to the cell phone towers so that they don't generate too much noise. They kind of, everything's quiet. And it's funny, if you've ever had your phone, if you've ever like had it in airplane mode and like turned it on and you've watched your battery die a couple of percentage points in like 5 minutes while it's searching, that's basically what it's doing, is it's turned the transmitter all the way up. Well, it's looking for any towers around it because it doesn't know where the nearest tower is. And so it's just blasting out radiation. And so when everybody turns on their phone at the same time as the airplane lands and it takes you even longer to find a cell phone antenna, basically what's happening is you're all fighting each other, not just to find the closest antenna, but you're all just dropping a ton of noise into this little
aluminum. It's funny. That's also probably what happened at our sister's graduation, where we all lost our signal with a sea of people.
Yeah.
It was the first one goes, and so it boosts the signal, and then it just domino effects.
Yeah.
Everybody's... You know, just like these droplets of rain, essentially, that ripple throughout the crowd. And then before you know it, we're all of our phones are screaming, "No, I can't connect."
Yeah, exactly. Another thing that they do is that you try to use different frequencies, so your phone's capable of like tuning to different stuff, so each channel gets a different frequency. They do time division, multiple axis. So it's one of the great analogies for this is the idea of like you're in a cocktail party, right? And you got people trying to talk to each other. Some are close by, some are across the room, and they're all trying to talk. And that noise, in that sense, is literally noise. It's the other conversations that would distract you from the conversation you're having. Quieting everybody down to the lowest possible is, you know, your conversation with the one person you're trying to have it is as loud as it needs to be. And since everybody else is quiet, that's good. One is you change the frequency. So you're just listening for the one, you know, the deep tones, because you're on the deep tone channel. So everybody in your conversation is speaking in the deep. There's a high tone channel, you know, like, and so you can ignore the other stuff. There's also the time division, multiple access, where everybody talks, you know, everybody is given a period of time to talk, and they only talk during that period. And so, like, one of the things, and all of these are technologies that are implemented in cell phone technology. So, like, you know, the everybody gets all each of, you know, all of those things that are hanging off of the cell phone antenna. Each one of those are antennas with different frequencies. So those are different channels that it can talk to. And if a cell phone antenna gets too many cell phones attached to it, it starts doing time division, multiple access. So basically it says this phone gets this period of time, this phone gets this period of time. And if you get enough phones on there, all of a sudden it just goes, okay, I've got too many phones. You're out of luck. Sorry, I'm not talking to you anymore. And that's when you start to get dropped phone calls and dropped service and stuff. So these are all the different things that you can do, and basically that are currently technologies that are in use that allow us to do more and more data, more and more cell phones. Effectively, so we have talked about this quite a lot over the last year, so I'll cover it briefly. But basically, there's still a lot of noise. There's still a lot messing around with everything. And so effectively what somebody wants to come up with is the Bose headphone solution. And some examples of this technology over the last couple of years has been, you know, obviously Bose noise cancellation, where there's a little receiver on the outside of the headphones that's getting a signal coming in, and then it takes that signal, it combines it with your creates an inverse, and it combines the inverse with your sound, and so with your music. And so the sound from the outside is getting penetrating into your headphones. Then it's mixing with this new signal that's the inverse and your music. And the inverse and the noise from the outside, they cancel out, create a flat, and then all that's left is your music. So that's how noise cancellation headphones work, right, in basic technology terms. We talked about probably 2 or 3 months ago about that one device that you, like, attach it to your window, And it effectively does that for your window, so you can like turn off the sound on the outside world. We talked about this with fiber optics, because as much as fiber optics don't have a noise problem, they do have a noise problem. And and you can measure that noise. It's just far less. But you can measure that noise, and you can kind of give information, and you can build up signals that you can figure out where to get rid of that noise. And so effectively what they talked about building new routers. They would send these cancellation signals along with it and allow you to do way faster speeds over traditional fiber optics. This is like a branch of technology, that's really been going gangbusters recently. Another example is how we do we got these super powerful telescopes on Earth, right? But we have a hard time seeing through the atmosphere because it creates a lot of the signals to disperse. So to deal with that, what we do is we shoot giant lasers in outer space, and we know what that laser is supposed to look like. So when we get back the information, when we look at that laser that's hitting the moon or going off wherever, we look at the laser and we say, okay, this is the disturbance that's happening in the atmosphere right now based on this known source. So we're going to create a cancellation signal to clean that up. And when we clean up the laser, it also clears up all the stars, and all of a sudden we can see all the stars with crystal clear vision. So these are all examples where basically he's coming up with this idea of we can create, theoretically, some sort of a cancellation signal to get rid of all that noise. So we can use all of these technologies to get the best signal that we can. There's still a lot of noise. Maybe we can do something to go even a step further to really create great quality signals. And obviously this is all being demonstrated earlier, and the answer is yes. And so one of the cool things that they're doing is like they're talking about having to implement, creating that with the Bose headphones. They work great because basically what happens is the actual headphone creates a barrier that the music has to, or the outside sound has to go through, and it gives enough time for them to measure the music, create the inverse signal, and the ambient noise, create the inverse signal and inject it by the time the ambient noise gets into your ear, and so they're hitting each other at the same time. So it creates that latency. Well, to do that with your phone is like way more difficult. So basically what you have to have is you have to have the towers know what signal they need to send in order to get your information, get the information directly to you. And so basically how this P-cell stuff works is that's what they do. They create all these little towers. It actually would have to require more towers to be able to get a better profile of the noise that's in the environment. And then they'd have these different and this article goes on. He gets deep into the technical stuff on here, and I got a little bit lost. So don't feel bad if you get lost. Unless this is like your field of expertise, and then if you get lost,
I skimmed through it and went, I'm done.
Yeah, pretty much. So basically what happens is they talk about this idea they can create these vectorized signals. And this is really cool because they can use static stuff and they can create these dynamic signals that all kind of mesh together, and they all mesh together at a specific location. And that specific location, guess what? Happens to be your cell phone. And so they figured out how to, and this is just like, this stuff blows me away that we can do this. Cause it like makes sense in kind of like a very simplified way, but you're like, well, how do we even, what the heck? And so basically what they've done is they say, as you're walking with your phone, they can track your phone. They know where it's moving. And because they know where your phone is and they know the noise in the environment, they can generate what they call these beams of information that they're shooting to your cell phone. And as you're walking around, your cell phone's getting all this data, and it's really cool. And it's you basically end up with, quote, your own channel, which is what they were talking about earlier with the Shannon limit, is because you get your own channel and all the noise has been canceled out, you get these super fast data speeds. It seems to be working really well, and they've got a bunch of different questions about, like, you know, is this something that's implementable into other things, like, I don't know, Wi-Fi? And his answer is yes, but there's not really any point to, because it doesn't have the same spectrum crunch problems that you do with P-cell. Is, you know, how much overhead is involved in gathering the channel of state information? That's kind of the big question is generating all this information. Is it something that we can practically do with computers today? And that's the big question that needs to be answered from a research perspective. Does it make sense to build this technology out? We'll continue on. But the reason, or they'll continue to do research on that, but the reason I really wanted to bring this up is because this guy's really smart. This guy who's writing this article. And they added a little bit of a nugget of information early on in this demonstration. And they basically were like, hey, there's some really cool applications for this technology. And they literally said, like, we've even given hints in the intro video to this, in the introduction to this video. And which got this guy really curious because he wanted to figure out what they're talking about. But they basically were like, you know, we're not going to give away all of our, you know, cool information yet, but we just want to let you know that it's coming. And basically what this guy came down to is, and this is when it really hits into my bell horn, because up to this point, I thought, like, P-cell, yeah, it's interesting, but whatever. Like, I'll read about it later. It's, you know, antenna technology, whatever. I'm so glad I read this article, though, because basically what this guy says is, back in the day, Nikola Tesla, wicked smart, came up with the radio a decade before Marconi did. It came up with, you know, alternating current, electricity. He worked with Edison and helped build the DC power. I mean, the guy's smart, right? You're like, legendarily smart. You know, there's a lot of evidence that to him doing the first x-rays ever and just never published it, so he doesn't get really credit for it, even though he was first. Guy is wicked smart, but if you've ever watched a movie, what was the one movie with Batman and Wolverine, but they were magicians, and they, like, created copies of each other, The Prestige, did you ever see The Prestige?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So part of the whole deal there is they actually meet Nikola Tesla, and he, like, shows them the wireless power transmission stuff, right? Well, like, that's legit. Like, that was actually Nikola Tesla was working on that, and they were talking about the idea of using, like, microwaves to send power, and that was always something that was, like, really cool. There's been demonstrations. It definitely works, but one of the biggest problems with it is that to generate these microwaves that are powerful enough to power things off in the distance, you have to have these massively powerful microwave transmitters, and, like, they fry everything, like, literally melt your face off with levels of energy. And they always required to be pointed at a specific direction, and so they, you know, you'd have these antennas that needed to move around and track your object. And so, you know, all the different types of wireless power that we've talked about in the, you know, on this show, they're always about, like, magnetic resonance and stuff. They're relatively low power, low, you know, they're relatively safe. But, you know, Tesla was, like, the first, and I've always thought it was interesting, but there's too many, like, practical problems to actually ever expect to be able to use that. Well, basically this guy who wrote this article was like, look, this whole P-cell stuff is really, really cool technology for cell phones. But basically everything that they're doing, you could do with microwaves. And what's really, really cool about that is what we talked about earlier was you take a bunch of antennas and you build a beam that essentially consolidates at a single location. So you start with a bunch of low-powered signals that all cancel out until they get to where they need to be at a highly focused point. You can move that point around just by changing the signal without actually changing the location of the transmitters and everything. And effectively, all of the old issues that came with the wireless transmission of power that were associated with Nikola Tesla's designs go away.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's really cool. That's really awesome. And he's like, and he goes, in the introduction video, they show a car driving down a highway, and the implication was that you could have your cell phone and this technology would work as you drive down the highway. That's what everybody who watched it saw, but this guy came back around and said, what if, you know, they talked about there was a hint to what this technology could do. What if the hint was, not only can we, you know, power your cell phone, you know, with a ton of data, but we can actually power your car with electricity using this exact same technology. And his conclusion was like, I'm not even sure if that's what they were going at, but definitely given how they've explained the technology to work, this is a practical application of the technology. You could build wireless transmitters and do it in a safe, effective way that doesn't, you know, doesn't melt people's bodies and would work as, you know, a powering, a source of super high energetic power. So that's really exciting.
Wow, that is cool.
Yeah. And you know, it'll be really, 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 really interesting to see, you know, kind of how this develops and just watch it over the years. I'm sure that, you know, it's still years away, but the fact that, you know, this is getting out there is pretty cool. And, you know, the reality of it is if this is really possible, if this guy's not, you know, completely making it up and everybody's like, you know, yeah, this is legitimately what we can do. It's a matter of when, not if, you know, we'll be using this technology, whether it's for military applications, space shuttles, or, you know, powering your cell phone from across the room. So pretty exciting. I don't know. I thought it was really, really cool. I thought it was worth the really long
read. So that read. Put Tesla's Gigafactory out of business?
Not necessarily, because I still think there's a place for batteries from a temporary perspective, but it definitely will limit the necessity for how many batteries they're going to be building. So obviously that was a segue to the Gigafactory. Basically what's going on, Tesla, they want to be able to sell, you know, affordable cars, their next model car. And one of the most expensive parts of the whole procedure is building batteries, because they have to buy batteries directly from somebody else. So they figure, hey, we vertically integrate, we build our own batteries. We can, if we do it at a big enough scale, we can get the price down way more, is what Elon Musk is saying. And
makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's going to require them to build a gigantic factory. How big? Gigabig. Like, they're calling it the Gigafactory, and they'll basically just be building batteries. The one problem that they're going to run into is that they need this factory to have a massive amount of yield in order for it to economically work out. And to the effect of, you know, we're not going to be building that many cars. In fact, eventually we want to build that many cars, but we need to be able to build and sell more batteries than we'll need for our own supply at first. And so that's where, if you've like heard any rumors about Apple buying Tesla in the last week or two, and everybody's been denying it. Basically, they came, like, basically the Tesla Gigafactory kind of cleared all that up, because what they really think was going on is going on is Elon Musk said, hey, we want to build batteries in America. We know you want to buy stuff from America, so how about we do this? How about you give us a ton of money, like you did with the Sapphire Glass dudes? We'll build a factory, and we'll give you a bunch of our yield. And so the theory so far, and nobody's confirmed this, but nobody's really denied it either, is that Apple's going to make a rather sizable investment in Tesla for the purpose of building this Gigafactory, and Apple will start buying all their batteries from Tesla for the iPhones and the iPads, and was one of the biggest purchasers of batteries in the world. That'd be a pretty good deal for Tesla. Would meet
that would
their
be
needs.
Cool.
Yeah. So
that'd be good for both of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
That was quite cool.
Cool.
Oh my goodness. Do you only have one more article? We'll come back around to that, I guess.
Sorry.
That's all right. You were busy this week.
Busy week. It was a busy week.
Did you get everything done that you needed to get done?
Yeah, I've got a couple more hours of reading I need to do tonight, but for the most part, yeah.
Well, the good news is you have an hour and a half left of tonight, so before it goes tomorrow morning. So HTC wants to turn all of their phones into a giant botnet.
That's good.
Yeah. Except it's a benevolent botnet. Basically what they want to do is they want to harness the smartphone's idle power. So everybody's got all these little computers in their pocket and they want to use it. And HTC is wacky in a good way. Basically what they're doing is they're making an app. You download this app to your phone, and it monitors for when your phone is plugged in to a wall and connected to Wi-Fi. So basically when you're at home and asleep or at work and charging your phone. And when the phone is idle, so it's not really doing anything. It's just, it's effectively, they think of this idle time as like, there's no chance of us drawing down your cell data. So we can connect to the Wi-Fi where you get a free unlimited data. You're connected to power, so we're not going to draw down your battery. And when that's happening, we're going to use your phone, for its processing power. And effectively what's going on is you've got there's all sorts of researchers all over the world that are doing these, you know, massively multi-threaded, modeling stuff. So like modeling environmental concerns, trying to, you know, come up with proteins and do all sorts of biological modeling, really, you know, huge scale computational, projects. And there are supercomputers all over the world at different universities and research centers that people share time on. And HTC has basically said, look, if we can get everybody who owns an HTC phone to download this app, on average, when phones are plugged in and powered up and doing this, we'll effectively have the power of a supercomputer. If everybody were to cooperate. And so all of a sudden they're like, you know, and they're talking about like how not just a supercomputer, but like one of your super high-end top four supercomputers in the world. This would be a massively powerful thing. And effectively it's what a botnet is. You know, a botnet is you've got a bunch of computers that all work together to do some task, and each one has got its own thing, and each is its own core, and they're all talking over the internet. So it's kind of this, like I said, it's a benevolent botnet is what you want to turn your phones into. And these would be used for different research processes, or research modeling process stuff. So effectively what will happen is, you'll come up with some sort of a problem. We want to model the environment. Well, when you model and do an environmental model, effectively what it is a bunch of matrix math. I mean, a bunch, like billions of nodes worth of matrices, which is just crunching numbers, just doing matrix math again and again and again and again. And what's really cool about matrix math, if you know anything about matrices, is you can break them down even to smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller pieces until everybody can do a piece of it. So if you've got like a million cores, you can break gigantic matrices down into tiny little ones, and everybody will just do one step calculation, return the information, and you compile it back into your final your final thing. And so that's why they're really great for these massively multi-threaded modeling type approaches. And that's why it would work here, is because effectively everybody would have one node that they could process with on their phone. And you would get your little matrix that your phone has to crunch numbers on. It would do all its computation. It'd send it back somewhere, assuming it's probably some server farm owned by HTC. It would be doing the distribution and recollection of the data. And then your researchers would get their data back. Boom. And they get their cool little model. So it's a cool project.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, I know people have made back in the day, it was probably 2 or 3 years ago. All Macs have like a have accelerometer. MacBook Pros, MacBooks have accelerometers in them because originally the intention was if it ever felt sharp G, it would actually retract the needle from the hard drive disk to protect the hard drive. It was a safety feature and it worked pretty dang well. But what it ended up doing was it ended up with every single MacBook has an accelerometer in it. And so what they were encouraging people to do for a while was to download an application which would basically track earthquakes. And so it would just run in the background monitoring the accelerometer. And if it ever noticed a propagating shockwave, it could make, it would alert stuff. And they were talking about, an actual distributed system where everybody's kind of working together. If you had enough nodes, and it wouldn't take very many with, an earthquake, but if you had enough nodes, you could actually track these things in real time and then give people that are, 50 miles, 60 miles away a 30-second heads up of, hey, there's an earthquake coming. and you could actually really effectively start to A, monitor, and B, do something in the ballpark of real alerts. And that was their big selling feature, right? They said, if you download this, we're going to be running in the background, we're going to be monitoring your computer, and if you're on the receiving end of one of these earthquakes, you're actually in the zone of the earthquake, but it hasn't reached you yet, we'll alert you that there's an earthquake coming. And so you can give people a heads up based on that information. So that was just, which is cool and fascinating. I'm a big fan of these kinds of projects. And the same, and there's a part of me that's like, man, I wish you would just build them in, stock, The heck? Why not? But people don't like that, and I don't know. but if I had an HTC phone, I would totally download this app. Be part of the research revolution.
Have at it. I probably wouldn't. I value my, I don't know. Maybe I would.
Why not?
Nah, probably not. I don't know. I hate contributing to that kind of stuff. I'm just not that kind of person.
You like to, when my phone's idle, I want it to be idle.
Yeah. Preserve my battery life. Gosh.
Well, but it's only when the phone is
playing. No, I know.
It's ridiculous, James. Be a better person.
I'm always, every time I go to Safeway too, I'm like, I don't want to round up. Quit talking to me. Come on.
Yeah, okay. I actually don't do that either. But it's like, I know it makes me to look like a total screw.
I'm like, why don't you round up? Gosh.
Exactly. I know it makes me seem like a complete Scrooge McDuck when I'm like, I walk in, like, would you like to donate $1 to breast cancer? And I'm always like, no. And it's like, at first it felt like socially when they first started asking you if you wanted to do it, before I was completely numb to saying no, I used to feel bad about it. But the rationale was always like, I actually believe in giving to organizations when I know what the organization's about. I don't actually like to give impromptu, in a moment's notice, to an organization I have no knowledge of. I don't know how much money they spend. I don't know what their overhead is. I don't know how many, cents on the dollar actually get to, breast cancer awareness or whatever, they're trying to sell me. And, it's just I don't give to those either. Walgreens is the worst, man. Constantly hitting you up. Want to get $5 to this organization? No, I don't. Go away.
See, whereas,
Bomba.
Again, I like the way they do it. When you go to the Disney World Animal Kingdom, they donate a part of your ticket price to their, animal organization. They don't ask you, would you like to round up on your ticket? No, it costs the same as all the other parks, and Disney donates. They round down, essentially.
Right. And which is, that's how
I'm like, cool. That's cool. And, tell me that. Hey, we decided part of your purchase, you bought eggs, and we're letting all purchase of eggs, we're rounding down on our side so that we can give to it. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, even if you charge more for eggs, I'm still, I like shopping at Safeway. I'm probably still going to shop for Safeway, even if my eggs cost 50 cents more so that you can give 50 cents to a charity of your, but, I'm assuming that if, the Safeway is going to go out of their way to, to donate that kind of money, they're going to, they're going to go through the due diligence of making sure it's a good organization, and the moral onus of doing that's not on me. It's whereas with my money, I feel like it is, so I'm okay with that, whatever.
Then you just feel like they're, I don't know. On one level, I get it. Again, it's just like that app. But on the other, you're like, man, they're totally taking advantage of a social situation here and doing it. And you're like, all right.
I say, cool.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something more interesting, like drone ships.
Yeah, okay. So there's a company out there. They want to be the Rolls Royce of the ocean. Guess what company it is? Are you supposed
Rolls
to guess?
Royce?
Yes. It is Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce?
Yeah.
That was my guess.
Basically, what they're they want to make drone freighter ships, which is kind of cool. We've talked about, I don't know, have we ever talked about it on the show? One of my dreams is to own a really big boat, I want to own a boat. I want to own a freighter. I don't know what I would do with it. I guess freight things.
All right. Put your house on it.
Exactly. I like really big boats.
That could be your vacation home. Because your normal home is inside of your airplane hangar.
Exactly. It's funny. I don't even like the ocean that much, but what I really like are battle cruisers from space epics. Which the closest thing to a battle cruiser from a space epic is a really big boat.
It's a battle cruiser.
Exactly. So this is my compromise. And some of the biggest boats in the world are freighters. It's just cool. It's very cool. Anyways, Rolls-Royce is trying to tech it up a little bit, and they've started development of drone freighters, and they're trying to get those going. What's awesome about it is classic mechanization. The people that have the biggest problem with this are the people that – are the unions for the people that actually do freighter ships. They're like, this is ridiculous. You'll never, no drone will ever replace human intuition and humans on a boat. Like, you guys are crazy. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, freighters have gone from crews of 40 people down to 5 because they're basically driven by computers nowadays anyways. There's just captains controlling joysticks. Are you serious? what are you talking about? And I'm assuming that these drone ships aren't going to be completely autonomous. They're going to have, they're going to have some sat link back to some dude who's sitting in, Colorado or wherever, and some factory, and he's just going to be, or some building is going to have 30 monitors in front of him, and each 4 monitor is going to be one ship, and he's going to be the pilot of all of these different ships all over the world. Like, it's not like there's going to be no humans there. And basically what they're saying is The unions are trying to protect jobs. That's what they're going for. It's a ridiculous argument, and they know it, but they've got to make an argument because they're trying to protect their employees. It's like, okay, that's fine. But everyone's saying, but the shipper guys, the guys that own these things and, have to pay the salaries of the people on the boats, they want to get rid of the people on the boats as quickly as possible. So, these ships are basically driven by themselves anyways. Most of the horrible, horrendous accidents that have happened in the last decade have been when a human being was piloting the boat instead of the computer, which is the case with most airplane crashes nowadays. It's it's when the human takes over that's where the problems start. And not just because humans take over in a bad situation, but it's because – it's usually humans take over, and then all of a sudden a bad situation arises. And so they're just like, yeah, let's get the human element out of here. And then the other big thing is they're like, one of the biggest problems that you have with like ships being taken over is that, A, you know, these pirates, they come along, they take over the crew, they kill the crew, crew members die, and then they sit at the captain's ship and they control these boats. If the boat is fully armed and there's no human beings on board and there's no way to control the boat from the boat, really makes them less than compelling targets for pirates, because the pirates are like, you know, they'll come up to the boat and they'll get onto the boat and then they'll just be standing there, all these locked boxes, and what are we supposed to do now? we can't get in them, we can't bring them back to shore, we can't bring the whole boat back to shore, like, and you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, the army shows up and, oh, there's a moving person on the boat. Boom, you know, and I was probably a little bit cavalier about people getting shot, especially with Captain Phillips being one of your nominated movies this year. But but you know, the fact remains, it would be way safer, and they legitimately sit there and they say, you know, from a pirating perspective, they'll make way less sense to hit an automated drone boat than a boat where you can take over the boat, because then you'll have a boat, as opposed to this, where you'll have a boat that's still going to its destination no matter what you do. You have to damage and destroy the boat in order to stop it from moving, which is a surefire way of getting yourself killed. And so, you know, they're arguing that no, this will make sense in the long run, which means that it's just a matter of time. I mean, it might be a slow transition as the unions fight it, but there's no reason to expect that this won't be the only way that things are shipped in 20 years, because it just doesn't make any sense to. Crews are really expensive and they're dangerous, and that they're, you know, it's bad for your livelihood. So.
So remember a couple weeks ago, I shared a story of that Twitter user @n who lost his handle and.
Yeah.
The person went through PayPal and GoDaddy and then got their Gmail account. And
wasn't that Twitter account worth quite a bit of money, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, he got offered a lot of money for it, you know, like 50 grand or something like that.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah, and this person kind of took it all, or blackmailed him, essentially. You know, said, I will delete all of your stuff. Yeah, good news, he got it back.
Oh, nice. Yeah, how did that come to be fruition?
You know, I don't know. They're not really talking yet. They just know that he's all good. It's been fixed.
Huh.
But yeah, so just wanted to follow up on that. The internet has been made right. It's been restored. Yes. Yeah.
That's cool. That would be really, really frustrating if he didn't get his stuff back, you know. I hope they come out with a statement and explain what happened, you know, because I'm sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool. He might do a follow up post, but I don't know.
Yeah. Because I'm sure they had to do some sort of a verification of the story. I'm positive that's what took so long. Is it was like, basically, there's a guy claiming, somebody stole my @n account, and how do you know? Like, you got to figure out that, yes, they stole it, and, you know, it's actually gone. And it wasn't just, you know, two friends that are having a tiff, and the one guy wants to steal it, and so he came up with this convincing story.
Right.
But, you know. So... Oh, this is exciting. So BlackBerry's got punched in the face again this week.
Good.
I know. So BlackBerry, they're, you know, what are they famous for? They're secure. They've got security. Their servers don't stay up all the time, so you know, they're not always useful, and their phones are not very, you know, awesome, and they just got a lot of shortcomings. But the one thing that's always been, continues to be, always been their selling point has been, you know, they're secure. If you're a big corporate user, corporate owner, and you want a secure business device, go with BlackBerry. Well, Boeing, quite surprisingly to everybody, decided to stop building airplanes for a second and replace their Blackberries. So they came up with what's called the Boeing Black. It is an Android-based phone, but wicked awesome if you're into security. Basically, BlackBerry still enjoys a number of government smartphone contracts, which I think is really what compelled Boeing more than anything, is that, you know, you can, if you can be the new secure phone for, you know, for people who really refuse to switch over to the iPhone or the greater Android market, you can get some pretty wicked awesome government contracts. And since Boeing does, you know, your military class development, I actually think this totally fits into their product development of building, you know, phones for the military. But a new Android device forthcoming from Boeing might threaten that relationship. The aviation giant copped to developing a secure smartphone last year, but now the so-called Boeing Black has hit the FCC, providing a little more background. It'll be sold primarily to government agencies and companies engaged in contractual activities with those agencies that are related to defense and homeland security. Boom. Like we were saying, you know, they're military contractors, so they're building military devices for this kind of stuff. The device will be marketed and sold in a manner such that low-level technical and operation information, but our information about the product will not be provided to the general public. So basically what they're saying is they've got all these different phones, right, that are starting to come out. The Black phone is a smartphone, I think it's like France or stuff. This thing is designed for the paranoid consumer. And basically this thing is locked down. Everything is encrypted a billion times. It is like super secure. Samsung has come out with their Knox software, and it's effectively, you know, security-based software. It's supposed to encrypt everything, make sure the phone is safe and virus-free. And now Boeing Black is coming out, and they're basically trying to replace the BlackBerry as the secure phone for the military and, you know, and your defense contractor stuff. So bad news for for BlackBerry is basically what this comes down to. It's one more toll of the death knell.
Good, keep it coming.
I know. I like watching it happen.
I know.
And then, man, I only really got one more story.
All right.
This is kind of cool. So when you watch the Netflix, speaking of, dude, they released the last 8 episodes of Breaking Bad on Netflix this last week. And yeah. I had only watched up to season 4 because they only had the first half of season 5, and I didn't want to get all like crazy angsty to watch the last 8 and buy them on iTunes. So it's like, I needed an emotional break after the 4th season because it was crazy, and I was like, "I'll wait." And it came out. So yesterday I ran a 10K, and then I came home and I started watching Breaking Bad on Netflix. I've watched 10 episodes in the last day and a half.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and for someone who like never sits and watches TV, I feel, my brain is like, oh, I'm fried from it. It's weird. But it's such a good show. Anyways, do you ever fall asleep to Netflix? Like, you know, watch it when you're going to bed, watch it while taking a nap or anything?
Maybe. Generally, no, but sure.
I do. I actually, it's one of the cool parts about having the Apple TV, right? I turn the Apple TV on and I cuddle up and fall asleep to episodes of Family Guy or something like that. And I usually watch superfluous shows because what drives me nuts is like, I wouldn't watch Breaking Bad as I fell asleep because if I fall asleep after 20 minutes, 40 minutes of this, you know, the second half of the show gets, I completely lost and I'm like,
yeah,
asleep. And certain platforms will just automatically play the next episode, which I would prefer not to happen, because if I'm falling asleep, it's like you could be three episodes deep before it realizes that you're asleep, and which is super annoying. and so at this big hackathon, they came up with a solution to this, and it's awesome as somebody who owns this device. Basically, your Fitbit tracker is designed to be able to keep track of your sleep schedule, right? So you tap with my device, you tap it a couple times, goes into sleep mode, and basically if you're still enough long enough, it'll say, oh, you're asleep, and you'll get credit for that. Well, since it's connected to Bluetooth and it's connected to your phone, and if you've got Netflix running in the background, Netflix knows when you're watching a TV show, and if it's connected to your Fitbit, Netflix knows when you're asleep now too. And so they're cool. Talking – yeah, I think this is really awesome. So basically what happens is they're just showing – this is just kind of like a demo after a couple minutes of hacking, but everyone seems really excited about it. So I'm hoping this gets a little more attention and actually gets a couple of different options. But they're like, yeah, we can now build it into the servers – where and into our applications, where if the Fitbit tells us that you're asleep, we'll pause Netflix for you and rewind it a couple of minutes, so that when you wake up the next, or you know, you go to bed the next day, pick up right where you left off, you know, and didn't miss a beat and fall asleep again. Yeah, so which I think is great, because I like falling asleep to the white noise, but I hate waking up to having missed half an episode of everything. It's funny. It's like I've seen like the first half of every single Family Guy episode. I have no idea how they end. And it's like I did that with Always Sunny in Philadelphia too. And you just miss these like crazy important plot points where like a season later you're like, when did that happen? I feel like this is a really big deal. Like this. Oh yeah, that's right. I sleep through the second half of every episode. I probably did watch it. So this would be a very cool product innovation. I hope it comes soon.
Nice. Maybe. They said, I think at the very end, that they may never see the light of day.
Aww.
But
someone will do it.
I get it. Well, cool, man. Yeah, I feel like you definitely carried us this week.
Yeah.
That's okay. I appreciate it. I keep promising everyone I'll be like, I'll be back to 100% next week. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Hey, man. I enjoy looking at tech stuff, so.
Good.
If it's too much for you, we'll survive.
All right. Awesome. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. My award-winning brother, there you go.
Thank you.
Is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.